Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon coming up in late November. The Challenge Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes and on Babbittville.com. Our next guest is the North American record holder for 3,000 meter steeplechase, 8 minutes and 45 tenths of a second. Mr. Evan Jaeger joins us. Evan, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
Yeah, I am wonderful. So take me back. You grew up in Illinois?
Correct, yeah. Outside of Chicago, Algonquin.
Yeah.
About 45 minutes northwest of Chicago.
I'm a Chicago boy. I grew up in the city, moved to Wilmette, went to University of Illinois, know all that stuff. No, running into the crappy conditions, all that stuff. So, were you a runner through grammar school before you got to high school?
I did it 7th and 8th grade before I got to high school, but at that time it's just like no practice, basically. You just go out and do the races, and it's just for fun.
Right. And so when you got to high school, you get ninth at Foot Locker, so you got an opportunity to come out here and run in San Diego. That must have been pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was the first time that I had been in any sort of weather where it was like 75 degrees in December, and I saw Christmas lights and Christmas decorations like on palm trees and stuff, and it just blew my mind.
What I love about that event is, okay, let's take the greatest high school runners in the country, bring them to the Hotel Del Coronado.
Yeah.
You know, and right on the beach. And it's like culture shock for people from back east, for people from Midwest. Had you been to California before?
No, I don't believe so. That was my first time in Cali.
You end up taking ninth. That's pretty cool, especially as a junior.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely exceeded my expectations going there. I had barely squeaked in. I was ninth at the regionals, so I didn't really know what to expect, and just went out there and tried to have fun, and ended up having a really good race.
When you finish top 10 in a race like that, because every coach is there, did it change things for you? Was there more focus on you?
I don't know if I'd call it. Yeah, I guess so. It definitely, I think it put my name out there nationally. That was the first time, like, it really, I really got opened up to the national running scene, and just kind of continued that through the track season.
Well, and it was at the, did you run 408 that year?
Yeah, 408 and then 850 at the Nike Outdoor Nationals.
Right.
In the 2 mile.
Yeah, and that was fourth at Nike Outdoor Nationals. And you also ran 405 in the same meet.
That was the following year.
Oh, the following year. Okay, the same meet the following year you ran 405. So when you, all of a sudden you run a 405, 847, things people look at you a little differently. Was there a lot of people recruiting you for college?
Yeah, I had gotten actually all of my college recruiting stuff out of the way the fall of my senior year. So pretty much all the recruiting had happened at the end of my junior year and then the fall starting my senior year of high school. So I had signed my national letter of intent with Wisconsin. I think it was just right before Foot Locker Regionals of my senior year.
So when you come out of high school and you've got, what, an 800, a 151, and a 405 mile, and an 847 2 mile, you've got some pretty good stats. What was it about Wisconsin that was it the coach Jerry Schumacher, or was that one of the reasons you went there?
Yeah, he was the main reason that I chose Wisconsin. I'd been debating between a lot of different schools, and really kind of realized that I wanted to go to a program where I wasn't going to be one of the best guys on the team, and I was going to go in and get my butt kicked every day by the upperclassmen and just try to work hard and get better. So going to a good program was important to me, and so that narrowed it down to a few schools, and ultimately, yeah, it just came down to the connection that I had with Jerry, and I liked his coaching style, and he just got me really excited to run track and try and be better and try and run fast.
So in your sophomore year, you signed with Nike and left college. Was that a hard decision?
Yeah, that was extremely hard. By far the hardest decision I ever made at the time. Maybe even still. I knew I was going to be losing out on the rest of the college experience, running cross country in college, and missing a lot of the guys on the team, and just kind of running in that NCAA system. And there was a lot of things that I was going to be giving up, but ultimately I knew I was going to be gaining a lot more in turning pro and training with professionals and kind of getting immersed in the professional lifestyle 3 or 4 years before my peers. So I knew that that's what I always wanted to do even after college. So
why not?
Yeah, exactly. Jerry and I thought, why not just get a head start on everything?
What's interesting is I had Frank Shorter on that long ago, and we were talking about, you know, his philosophy is that as a pro, as a top, a pro or collegiate guy, you've got 10 great years to be at your peak. And if you spend, you know, 3 or 4 of them in college running dual meets, cross country, all the rest of that, you know, your career can be over before you've made dime one. Did that enter into it? That it's like, listen, you know, it's not like you can run forever. If I feel like I can make a living doing this, that's why you go to college, is to make a living. If I can make a living doing being a runner, why not?
It definitely was not the money for me. I basically just wanted to do what I thought would be best for my future running career. I thought that training as a professional and putting in the longer miles and learning how to be a professional and
right,
getting on the professional racing circuit, I thought that that was going to benefit me more than staying in the collegiate system and racing against a bunch of kids that were my age and younger than me. So it just purely came down to what I thought was going to be best for me 5 years down the road. And money was not an issue. I would have had no money problems had I stayed at Wisconsin. I was on a full ride. So
right.
So that wasn't what entered in my mind. It was mainly, that was kind of the last thing I thought about. It was like, what was going to be best for my training?
Sure.
Am I going to miss my family and friends?
Right.
Is moving a cross country going to be something hard to deal with? So those were the things that I was thinking about when
you made that decision. So did you move to Portland from there to train with Jerry?
Correct, yeah.
And what was there a surprise? Was there a breakthrough race where you realized, okay, this was definitely the right move?
Yeah, I'd say probably the breakthrough race. I mean, I had a really good 5K at Stanford early in the season.
Yep.
That went really well. But I was still... It was kind of a battle between myself, Hassan Mead, Chris Derrick, and German Fernandez. And those guys were all either my age or a year younger than me. So that wasn't really, even though I ran a fast time, it wasn't like a home run out of the park.
Yeah.
That home run really came at the U.S. Nationals when I made the team, the world championship team in the 5K.
Right. It wasn't a three Wisconsin guys?
Yeah, it was. I was third behind my two training partners and Badger alums. So that was an awesome experience. That was a really fun race, and that definitely kind of elevated my expectations of myself and kind of showed that I think I had made the right decision.
You belonged, no question about it. So then you're 11th in your heat in the IAAF World Champs in Berlin. And then, so you're coming off this high of making the USA Track and Field, making it to the Worlds. And then 2010, foot pain, stress fracture.
Yeah.
And that must have been just demoralizing.
It was. It really was. Because, this is the thing that I love to do most, running. And
yeah.
I'm making my livelihood on it. And it kind of sucks the life out of you when you have an injury like that, because you're not allowed to do what you want to do, what you're supposed to be doing. And it kind of, it's tough. You spend a lot of time not being able to do that. And I started having some doubts of like whether or not the surgery that I had to repair the stress fracture had gone right. And was I ever going to be able to run the same again? And was I going to get back to the same fitness? Cause I thought that I had a great fall and a great winter, leading into 2010. And, I really wasn't ready to give that up. And I just wanted to do everything I could to get back to being healthy.
And it took a while. It's like you went to the dark side because you had to do pool workouts and bike workouts and, you're basically training as a triathlete, running in the pool and all that crap. Until what, March of 2011, those workouts, I remember watching Meb running in a pool. Oh my God. I don't think there's anything more mind numbing than that.
Oh really? Yeah. The pool is the worst. I could only ever bear doing 40 minutes in there before, like, I was just completely mind numb.
Yeah.
So I did, as soon as I could, I did most of my training on stationary bike.
Right.
I just basically rode as hard as I could every single day, trying to get back to fitness and kind of playing little games with myself on the bike and seeing how hard I could ride. And that was a good way to get my competitive juices flowing.
Yep.
But there's still nothing that replaces just going out for a run. I was pretty much going to practice at the same time every day as my teammates,
yeah,
watching them go out for runs.
Oh.
And workouts was the hardest thing ever, seeing everyone get really fit, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like 10 pounds, 15 pounds overweight.
Really? Even with the bike, when you ride the bike, all you want to do is eat everything.
Yeah, but it's still like I wasn't able to get as much work as I could running.
Right.
90 miles a week.
So. Yeah, I think so. 90 miles a week, you don't have to worry about gaining weight.
Exactly.
So you're doing these bikes. The problem with the pool is, you don't really feel, it's not like you're on the bike, you can sweat your brains out.
Yeah.
You can work so hard and go, there's a puddle, there's my heart rate, I'm dying,
yeah,
and feel like, okay, this is, maybe it's not running, but it's at least equivalent. It's hard to run in the pool and get that feeling.
Exactly, yeah, because the water's constantly just cooling you off.
Yeah.
So you don't really get that same effect, and you're not wearing any clothes, so, like, you step off the bike and all your clothes are just drenched, and you're overheating and you're exhausted. But like in the pool, you're cool the whole time. You're not really sweating, and you step out and you're kind of just bored of doing it. So like you step out and you're like, I don't even know if that did anything.
Exactly. Like, all you are is bored. You're just like, okay, I did that. My heart rate seems like it's sort of resting. I don't know if it's really done anything. But then when you come back in spring of 2012, did Jerry mention Steeple? Was that the first time that you heard, that you thought about that?
Well, the first time I thought about it was in high school. One of my high school coaches, he ran track in college, and he obviously knew what type of runner I was.
Yeah.
He thought that I had potential to be a good steeplechaser. So he kind of gave me a little hint towards that when I was leaving high school and going into college. But I kind of just brushed it off and ran the 15 my first year, kind of just to get immersed in the collegiate racing system, and then kind of did the same thing turning pro. Just wanted to kind of just do everything I could just to prepare for the running side of things professionally. So the opportunity didn't really come up until 2012, and I knew that I wanted to make the Olympic team.
Right.
That little nudge that my high school coach gave me kind of popped back into my mind, and I don't know if I brought it up or he did, but I think we were both kind of on the same page in thinking about it at that time period. So we were both completely on board with it, and we knew that basically the only way to do that was if I could get through the 2011 season healthy without any issues from the surgery that I had had. So I got through that season and started training up in the fall without any foot pain, and had like all my range of motion back. So we thought we'd give some of the hurdling and water jumping a try just to see how I reacted to it, and everything went really well. So we just decided to go with it.
What I love is your first time out, you go to Mount Sac, and what legendary event, you go 8:26.
Yeah.
You know, you're only a couple seconds off the Olympic A standard, first time out.
Yeah.
You beat Daniel Hewling, who was the best U.S. steeplechaser at the time. Did you surprise yourself with that?
No, I don't think I really surprised myself. We had done some workouts. We had done quite a few workouts over barriers, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
Probably five or six. And so I had gotten the rhythm of hurdling at a faster pace. And I knew that I felt comfortable at the pace that we ran. But I think what surprised me most was actually, like, winning the race.
Because yeah.
I did know how good Dan was. And I kind of just fully expected to go in there and kind of sit on him as long as I possibly could and then just blow up and kind of let him run away from me the last 800 meters. That's what I expected to happen. And I ended up taking the lead with like a K to go. And I just remember feeling so strong and coming across the finish line, winning. My first race win.
Really?
Since like high school, basically.
at Mount Sac. It's not like you won at the Oxnard Open. You're talking Mount Sac with all the big boys, and you end up winning, and basically going, okay, I'm close to Olympic trials qualifier here.
Yeah, I like totally fell in love with the event that.
Oh yeah, immediately.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, this is my event. Like, I'm sticking with this. I just had so much fun. It was so much fun. So yeah, that was a major breakthrough for me. Just,
yeah.
Especially coming off those incredibly hard last 2 years.
Right.
Like, dealing with the injury, it was such a great moment.
Well, and then, you know, the thing with steeple, I love the steeple. I used to go out to the track and just stand there at the pit and wait for the carnage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's where all the carnage happens.
Of course.
Yeah. So there's something, I remember Tom Hunt, who at one time was American record holder 10,000, but he also was a steeplechaser, and I asked him to explain the difference between steeple and other events. He goes, in other events, you fade. In the steeple, there's... You're fine 1 second, and next second there's a piano on your back.
Exactly.
It's like instantaneous. You are, I'm great, I'm winning, this is great, and next minute you're like, I don't know if I can make it another foot.
Yep. And I've been through so many of those experiences and races just over the last 4 years. It's such a tough event when it goes poorly, but it's weird. Early on in the race, it feels easy because you're not running as fast as you are for a 5K. It's basically 10,000 meter pace, right from the gun, and it feels good. But then, towards the end, those hurdles and especially that water jump can be incredibly daunting.
What's the worst thing you've seen carnage-wise out there?
Probably myself.
Really? What'd you do?
I don't know if you saw, but I raced the Diamond League.
In Paris?
In Paris, yeah.
Winning the race.
Essentially winning the race and falling on the last dry hurdle. I never imagined in my career that I would fall over a dry barrier, but especially the last one. But it happened, and it's just like I put everything I had into getting over that barrier, and I still couldn't do it. So it's a tough event. You definitely have to know how to manage your energy levels over the course of 3,000 meters.
And that was 4th of July.
That was 4th of July.
Fourth of July, Paris Arena, Diamond League. And even though it's like one of those good news, bad news things, because even though you went down and got beat, you still broke the North American record under 8:01.
Yeah. Yep. It was definitely bittersweet. It was more bitter than sweet, though, because breaking 8 minutes and winning a Diamond League race was a huge goal of mine.
Yeah.
And basically having it in your hands and losing it within a span of half of a second.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking. So I, even though I broke the American record, I couldn't really enjoy that or take solace in that for probably a good week.
So what do you learn from that? I mean, it's one of those things. It's sort of like when people talk about baseball, it's like, well, that's baseball. I mean, that's steeple, right? You never know. Those hurdles just all of a sudden just jump up and bite you.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the thing I take away from it is, I had come off the water jump and gotten extremely excited because I got over the last major barrier. Like, all I have to do is get over this one, and I'm going to break 8 minutes. And I got really excited, and then in a split second, I kind of changed my perception, my mentality, and I was like, all right, focus on this barrier and then you can celebrate. And it just shows me that the race ain't over until it's over. And you can't think about winning, you can't think about anything until you cross that finish line. So it's going to be in the back of my mind going into the World Champs, which is a good thing. I'm glad it happened at Paris instead of at the World Champs.
Or the Olympics.
Or the Olympics, exactly.
you'd be that agony of defeat guy on the ski run, from Old Wild World of Sports, coming down the ski run and going, falling off the side there. I'd be like, oh, my God, they're playing that again.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do if that happened to me at the Olympics. I might have to take a break from the
So speaking about the Olympics, so 2012, and again, I love the fact that, I mean, 2 years earlier, you're dealing with, is my career over? Is my foot reacting to the surgery? I'm running in this stupid pool day after day to making it to the Olympics, right? You get to go to London. You run 8:17:40, and then in the Olympics, you get sixth in the Olympics. You break the American record, 8:06. So the fact that you were down and then came back and made it to the Olympic, talk a little bit about the Olympic experience, because I imagine just making it to the games was a huge win for you.
Yeah, the trials, the Olympic trials race, and winning there in the steeple, I think with it being my first year steepling and having a lot of questions surrounding the decision to do that. It was best career moment for me by far. It was an awesome experience being able to call yourself an Olympian for the first time. You stamp that, and no one can ever take that away from you. It was like a lifelong goal for me. As soon as I started running, pretty much, I wanted to make it to the Olympics. So that was a long time coming, and it was just such an awesome experience, finally being able to do that. So that was absolutely incredible for me, and then I was on a huge emotional high for probably like a week, and then I think a week or 10 days later, I went to Monaco to race a Diamond League steeple, and that's where I broke the American record there. I kind of just went in, not really knowing what to expect. I thought I might be in like 8:10, 8:12 shape, and I just wanted to kind of go out behind the Kenyans and see how long I could hang on for and try to pass as many people as I could over the course of the race. And I think that was just a case of like having an absolute perfect day. I think everything went right for me. Pacing was perfect. I hurdled well. I had great water jumps, and didn't have any expectations going into it. So I think that really, all those things really allowed for having a great race, and broke the American record there.
Yeah.
That kind of changed my perception of what I wanted to do going into the Olympics. Making the final wasn't really the main goal for me anymore. I wanted to, like...
get a medal.
Exactly. I thought it put me right at fifth or sixth seed going in to the Olympics, and I thought that if I had an absolute perfect day and a couple other guys messed up, I would have a chance of nagging a medal. And obviously, I was still really new to the event, and definitely not as fit as those guys. So I think sixth was great. It was a great showing for me, and just kind of jump started my steepling career. That those like 6 weeks or whatever it was.
Yeah.
6 weeks.
So what's cool about that? You come away from that wonderful Olympic experience, and then right away, I'm sure you're thinking, I'd like a little more of this. I'd like a little Rio would be sort of nice. Now that I broke American record and. I found my event. This is my event. I own this event now. I'm the best American guy. So I'm guessing that from 2012 on, it was all about how do I get faster at steeple.
Exactly. Yeah. Rio was 2016 was still a long way away at the time, and I thought initially, like, I don't know if Jerry and I sat down and talked about it right away or not, but. I realized I was going to be 27 in 2016, and that's pretty much prime age for a distance runner. So we wanted to do everything we could to, like you said, get to the point to where I was as fast as I could possibly be in the space steeple. And I think that meant getting faster at everything else. I wanted to get faster over 5,000 meters to have the strength to get me through the whole race, and then get faster over 1,500 meters to have the speed to go out at a fast pace or close hard over barriers over the last lap or 600 meters. And just working on being an all-around really good distance runner. And that's pretty much what these last 2-3 years have been all about, and what the time between this summer and next summer will be about as well.
What I love is when you go in after the Olympics, you ran a 3,000, a straight 3,000, and go 7:35, and then Melrose Games 2 mile in 13, 8:14 and fourth, and that was the fourth fastest American indoor 2 mile of all times, right? So you're when you're running faster for shorter distances, that plays well when you're talking about a 3,000 steeple. And then you ran a 3:53 mile, at the pre and 14. So you just look at your progression. All these other events are sort of stepping stone. They're not really what you're focusing on, and you're still having great success.
Yeah. I mean, one of my main focuses for my career is to just, like, if you look at my times, I want to be a really good distance runner in everything. I don't want to be
just a steeple guy. You want to have some diversity.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are plenty of guys that have run incredibly well in the steeple. You look at, if you look at the Kenyans, Ken Boy has run 7:55 and got all these medals, but he doesn't really run any other event. Which, I mean, I would take his credentials over mine probably at any point. But one of my goals is to be like a really well-rounded distance runner and be looked at as not just a great steeplechaser in America, which has been looked at as like a weak event for the States for a long time.
Exactly, yeah.
I want to like kind of give my steeple credentials some backing with some fast times in the other events. Well,
you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people, the way we used to look at marathoners, okay, the Kenyans are just better. They're just better at the marathon. They're just better at the steeple. And you know, you've changed that. Are other college athletes and high school athletes reaching out and going, listen, you know, I never thought Americans can be a factor at the steeple, but you've changed that. Tell me more about the steeple.
I've never had anyone put it like that. I've had a couple kids here and there kind of just ask me for kind of tips on what to do when getting into the steeple. It's so different than everything else that you do have to put a lot of extra time and effort into becoming a good steeplechaser. But, never really had anyone go about it like you've really broken down this barrier. I think a lot of the guys before me have done that in the flat event. Bob Kennedy breaking 13 was huge, and Craig Mottram did it at around the same time, maybe a little bit later, I'm not sure, for Australia. Big, tall, white guy, not from Africa. And I think those guys kind of really broke down the stereotype that you can't be as good if you're not born in Africa.
Right.
So, I think it is good. It would be sweet to have a non-African break the 8-minute barrier and kind of get in the mix with the Kenyans and in the steeple at the World Championships and the Olympics.
What's interesting to me is even with your little forward roll over the hurdle, you still went 8 minutes. How fast do you think you can go?
I think I probably would have been 8:57 something in that race in Paris had I not fallen.
Yeah. Oh, no question. Yeah, you would have been what, 7:57 or so.
Yeah, I'm not sure how. I don't know if I could have gone any faster in that race had I done things differently, because obviously I was obviously extremely tired and couldn't get off that over that last barrier. So it would be kind of foolish of me to say, yeah, I could have run like 5 seconds faster.
Right.
When I fell.
But you know you're a sub-8-minute guy. I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah, it's tough because I haven't actually done it, so
right.
I can't say it, but I definitely feel like I can do it at this point.
I'll say it. It's okay.
And yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
but yeah, in the future, hopefully I can stay healthy, knock on wood, and continue to kind of knock some time off my steeple PR each year. So hopefully I can go faster than 7:57 at some point.
So what does the rest of your year look like?
Right now, me and the rest of my teammates that made the World Championship team are in Park City, Utah, getting some altitude training in.
Nice.
And we'll come down back to Portland in about 7 to 10 days and kind of just do some laundry, repack, and then our Team USA training camp leading into the World Championships is in Narita, Japan.
Nice,
so
yeah.
Head over there, be there for 10 days, and then race the World Championships. And then still kind of trying to figure out and nail down my racing schedule after that. But I think right now I'm looking and hoping to do another fast steeple after the World Champs, and then try and get into a fast 5K somewhere and try and get a PR there as well.
Now, I'm sure it didn't, you know, when you fall over that last hurdle, I'm sure you're not really excited to have people come up and congratulate you, but it was really cool to see the Kenyan guys run over. And they, you know, I was like, hey, dude, way to go. Thank you for falling in the last hurdle, but
you
pushed us big time. And
yeah.
I'm sure you surprised those guys.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I don't think Juresh kind of, I don't know if he expected me to, he probably didn't expect me to pull away from him at any point in the race.
Right.
There. So I'm sure I surprised him in that sense, but like I've raced him and all those guys a lot over the last 2 years, and I've been right up in. I was third in Brussels last year.
Yep.
I kind of pushed Juresh to a fast pace in Oslo early in the season last year, so I don't think he was surprised to see me up in the mix of things. But yeah, I doubt that he expected me to run away from them.
Yeah, I think they'll be racing you a little differently moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is cool. Yeah. I bet you appreciate that. You want to race the best guys and knock them off at their very best.
Yeah, I thought when I was younger, 2010, my teammate Chris Walensky he had a breakout year, and he ran some really fast times over 10,000 and 5,000.
Yep.
When he was running these Diamond League races in the 5,000, he broke 13 for the first time, and all the Kenyans, they were super happy for him, and they all congratulated him. It's kind of like welcoming to the club, and I just thought that was so cool, and that was one of the things that I wanted to have for myself. I was like, I hope one day that like I can get the recognition and the camaraderie from Kenyans at some point in my career. I think that would be really cool.
Well, I think it might be late next summer in Rio.
Well, like you said, I got a little taste of it in Paris. So I'm happy to kind of have established myself in the mix with these guys.
Love it. Hey, Evan, thank you so much for taking so much time. It was really, really nice to get to meet you over the phone. Congratulations on everything that you've been doing, and it's great to see an American at 8 minutes, man. That means that sub 8 is coming soon.
Yeah, I really hope so.
Love it. Evan Jaeger has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on BabbittVille.com or on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.